When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This is The Art of Charm. Learn everything you need to know to crush it in business, love, and life. The Art of Charm is where ordinary guys become extraordinary men.
Welcome to The Art of Charm. I'm Jordan Harbinger. The Art of Charm brings together the best minds in the industry to teach you how to crush it in life, love, and at work. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors teaching you their expertise and packing decades of research, testing, and tough lessons into a concise curriculum. We want to empower you, so we've created one of the premier lifestyle programs available anywhere that brings you tools previously only available to elite high performers. Make sure to stay up to date with everything going on here and get some great free content that we don't or can't share on the show by signing up for the newsletter at theartofcharm.com. Also at theartofcharm.com, we've got a great blog with tons of amazing content and in-depth articles. And, of course, if you're new to the show and you want to find out more about what we teach here at The Art of Charm, you can go to the website and we'll email you a starter kit of all the top podcasts here on The Art of Charm. We'll send you our fundamentals toolkit that covers topics like body language and nonverbal communication, vocal tonality, dating, attraction, persuasion, business networking and negotiation, relationship management, public speaking, and more. And we've got our live programs running every single week here in Los Angeles, California. In fact, we've got guys from all over the world, which shows that no matter where you are, you can make it here if you want to learn and grow. We're sold out 5 to 6 months in advance, so if you're even thinking about it a little bit, you should get in touch ASAP by phone or just email me, jordan@theartofcharm.com, and get some info from us now so you can plan ahead. We're looking forward to meeting you here at AOC. Today we're talking with my friend Ian Altman. He grew a company from $100 million to over $1 billion in just 3 years. Now I know what you're thinking. He started with $100 million. Cry me a river, big deal. But $1 billion is still a lot of money no matter what. And he's a great guy, really good friend of mine. I really like this guy because not only is he damn persuasive, but he always holds his word. And I think that's really fascinating because he balances it very deliberately. We're going to talk about why it's better to be trusted than liked, and why it's not about the sale, it's about the fit, which earns the trust, and what two questions you can ask to uncover the truth in either competitive business situations or relationships. And when you ask for advice, are you seeking validation or real input? We're going to show you how to decipher that, and a really cool drill for taking notes on the phone that will show you how to see through the gaps and read between the lines and help you uncover what you've overlooked. So enjoy this one with Ian Altman. Of course, you know this from just doing your own consulting, that it's not the hour, it's the years you spent before that going through the school of hard knocks and getting millions of dollars in education, formally or informally, that have led you to the conclusions which you are now teaching. That is the value.
Yeah, I mean, and this is something that I teach all the time, which is, look, there isn't a single person that hires me that says, you know what, I'd pay $20,000 an hour for that. Right? What they're saying is, yeah, you know what? I guess it's worth $20,000 for this person to have enough experience and knowledge and alleged wisdom that they're able to distill it down to something we can consume in an hour.
Yeah, you're right. It's the distillate. What's that like silly cliche that everyone loves? It's like an Instagram meme. It's like, the engineer went around and kicked the tire and fixed the problem. And they're like, I'm not paying for that. And then it's like, oh, you're not paying for the tire kick. You're paying for the 10 years of schooling that it took for me to know which tire to kick or some shit.
Yeah, it's the joke of the HVAC guy comes into your house and says, oh, so you have a problem with your HVAC system. Yeah, okay, let me take a look at it. And walks around and takes a little ball peen hammer and hits like just this one spot. And as soon as he does, like, you know, everything's fixed. And he goes, hey, that's, you know, it's $100. I'm like, $100? I mean, it took you 5 minutes. And he goes, okay, here's the bill. $5 to hit this thing with a hammer is 50 cents, right? $99.50 is knowing where to hit it.
Right. If, yeah, exactly. It's funny because when we met, I was like, oh, this guy's really cool. This guy's really fun. I didn't know you were such a big deal, man. You got a lot of experience. And I knew you were heavy duty into business and stuff like that, but I didn't realize quite exactly what you did because I don't even think we talked about business. I think we just joked around a lot.
That's the beauty of it, right?
Right. That's the point.
That's the thing that most people don't get. It's like, when the first night I got there, Chris Brogan and I connected and we're having dinner. And so we ran into someone later like, oh, you guys were talking, man. I wish I was a fly on the wall there. What were you guys talking about? We're like, let's see, our kids, travel, relationships, like
right.
Nothing that you would expect us. Like we were talking about life and it had nothing to do with business because like we talk business all day long and no one wants to talk about that. And it's funny because I'm sure you know you get some of your students or listeners who they might be talking about business when they go out on a date. They might be talking about themselves, but they really should be talking about the other person anyhow. So
yeah.
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah, it's funny because I think you and I originally, I mean, we talked for a minute probably during the day, but then we went out to dinner and I'm sitting next to you. And my first thought was, wow, this guy's really gregarious, you know, because that can go to one of two ways. It can be like, okay, shut your face. I'm had it with this guy. But I was like, oh, this guy's really fun. I'm really glad I'm on this side of the table. That's good positioning, right? And I didn't realize you were in sales. Now it makes total sense, of course, after doing a little bit of background checking, because your job, and correct me wherever I'm wrong here, is just to get people to like and trust you. The product, the sale, the whole deal can kind of come later on.
In fact, I would say trust is more important than like.
Yes, that's good. Let's talk about that. People ask me this question all the time, or they'll say, you know, you're not very likable if I tell them something they don't like to hear. But I'm like, but you know I'm right.
Yeah.
Let's go into that a little bit.
All right, cool. Think of it this way. And this is something I spend a lot of time with people on. And I have these spirited debates with CEOs and executives who will say, no, you know, I think like is more important than trust. And I say, look, the trifecta is like trust and respect. We would all like to do business, whether it be in relationships with people we like, we respect, and we trust. But if you had to pick one, what would it be? And so people are like, oh, you know, you'll get this back and forth conversation. And when I ask people, I say, okay, how many of you are involved in business with somebody who maybe you don't like that much, but you trust their knowledge and their expertise? So even though they maybe are a doctor with a bad bedside manner or an attorney who's a little bit abrupt or an accountant who's got a dead personality, you still trust that person. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everyone raised their hand. Okay. How many of you know somebody who may be a family member, one of your dearest friends in the world, but for whatever reason, you wouldn't do business with them? Everyone raised their hand. Great. So trust trumps like. Now, in an ideal world, we'd love to find people we trust and like.
Right.
But as soon as trust goes out the window, no one cares about like.
Right. Nobody wants to. Yeah, exactly. Because there's always going to be the counterexample of, yeah, I really like that guy. He's really funny. And, you know, he's a great guy to have a beer with. Yeah, will you invest in my business? Oh, yeah, no, I can't do that. You know, you're a great guy and all, but...
It's exactly it. And that's where that's where the trust factor comes in. I'm fortunate in that in what I do, I have the ability to be very selective in the clients that I work with. So it's very rare that I get a client who I don't like working with because, candidly, I'm just not going to do that. If I don't like them, I'll just... walk here's any money you've paid me and just we're done because life is too short. I don't want to deal with people I don't like.
Right.
I always tell people, look, if you trust them, you don't have to go hang out with them. But once that trust is gone, who cares about anything else? Because at that point, you don't know when they're going to stab you in the back, but you're sure it's going to happen.
That's a good point. Right. Yeah. Because there's that greed there, that little hitch there that you're like, nah, it's just not working for me. And that's a dangerous place to be. And you can't, people think you can keep folks like that at bay, whether this is in your business life or not. You think, well, you know, I'm going to keep this person at arm's length. But whenever you have to look over your shoulder in business or in a relationship for that matter, you're in trouble.
Absolutely. And there's so many of these things that cut across business and personal. And a lot of times I'll share concepts with people and they say, well, so that's for business. And then you'll see the wheel spinning like, I could use that in dating, couldn't I? Like, yeah. Actually, you could. But that's not my expertise. Other people have expertise in that area, but absolutely you could. And there's certain techniques we talk about in a business context that thankfully you would never use in a personal environment.
There's lots of that as well. And frankly, so you're a two-time best-selling author. Even Seth Godin was like, hey, read this book on B2B selling. You started and grew companies, and one of them, I mean, nine figures. That's like, you don't hear nine figures very often. I mean, that's a lot of commas, man.
Yeah.
So congratulations on that. And selling with integrity, people talk about that a lot. You don't hear a lot of, well, yeah, and it applies at the highest level. Usually when you hear selling with integrity, you're talking about somebody who sells a $29 product on a, you know, some sort of website and they're a blogger. You rarely hear about it from somebody who's made $1 billion doing it. That's powerful because it shows you that whole thing like, oh, yeah, it breaks down once you play with the big boys, just isn't true.
Yeah. And once again, a lot of this stuff cuts across business and personal. It used to be that businesses could almost get away with selling stuff, whether it worked or didn't work.
Right.
And what would happen is if it didn't work, people would tell the people in their community. And their community might have been 3 people, 5 people, 8 people. And now their community is billions of people. So the advent of social media has made it so that old school sales tactics that are dishonest just don't work anymore. And if you spend time trying to make sure that whoever you're selling to is getting the results they anticipated, then you're going to get a lot of repeat and referral business. And if you don't deliver the results, then you're probably going to get a lot of complaints and you're going to be a flash in the pan. So you might make the short-term sale, but long-term, you're not going to succeed.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. You ever bought anything in another country and it's like it's screwed up and you go back there? I remember the first time I learned this. I can't remember where I was, but I bought something in another country and I went back and I was like, this is broken. And they're like, it definitely is.
It is.
I'm like, well, I bought it from you yesterday. And it,
do you want to buy another one?
It was broken. And they're like, yeah, I can fix it for $20. And I'm like, no, I bought it from you yesterday. And they're like, let me see if I got a glue gun. And I'm like, no, dude, I want a new one or I want a refund. And they're like, no, we don't do that.
Exactly.
And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so powerless right now. Cause I was used to going to like Macy's and being like, yeah, I don't really like this. And I know it's been 90 days and I don't have a receipt. And they're like, don't worry about it. Is there something here that you'd like better? Even though you've clearly worn this a lot. And I'm like, I'm a douchebag.
Dude, 90 days. Most of these stores, it's like, look, so I bought this when I was 7. And I never wore it. And they're like, well, I mean, I can't give you the full retail for it,
right.
But I can give you 60 cents on the dollar for this thing you bought in 1987. Yeah, okay, great.
It's funny. You hear those stories about, like, I don't even know the guy's name, but Nordstrom. Somebody walked in with, like, a set of used tires.
Yeah.
And he was like, listen, he told his clerk, who was just fuming, listen, just do something for this guy. It's all good. They like gave this guy something in return for these used tires because it meant more to him to be of service to everybody than it did to just like, he lost a lot of money. He had to throw away tires and give this guy new product. But it somehow computed for him to just get that rep over that
money. It's funny you give that example. In same side selling, there's a section I write about restraint and basically helping your customer find the right solution, even if it's not yours. And I tell a story about a guy named Van Mensa, who has historically been the number one or one of the top 2 or 3 salespeople at Nordstrom for like 20 years. I mean, the guy is just legendary. He'll sell more pre-sale before the sale starts than like the entire department will sell for the next 3 weeks. I mean, the guy is just a legend. And I had the good fortune of this was the guy I bought suits from forever. And to this day, it's funny, I'll buy custom suits from him at Nordstrom rather than go to a custom tailor because I know he's going to take care of me. And the story I wrote about in the book is I was taking a trip, I think it was the UK, and I didn't have any like, you know, warm gloves that would go with like a top coat and everything. So I went to him, we try on everything and nothing fit right. I got big paws and big hands. And so he says, I know what you need. And we walk in this mall out the door at Nordstrom to the other end of the mall to a Macy's. walks to the men's furnishings department. The salesperson's trying to like pitch me stuff. He's like, no, no, I need to show Mr. Altman this particular brand in XL. Great. I put it on. He goes, how does that feel? I said, wow, that's great. He says, we complete the transaction. We're walking back to Nordstrom now. And he says, oh, and this goes without saying, but if you have any issues with these gloves, just bring them back to me and I'll take care of them.
Right. Like bring back a product that we bought from another store where he got paid
exactly.
Nothing and he will return them for you instead. I love how you dropped in the XL. Like, yo, just so everyone
yeah.
knows.
I mean, it's just kind of funny, but it was like, you know, he's just making sure like, hey, bottom line, you need a pair of gloves. You're going on your trip and we don't sell them. And I'm not going to send you down to this other place where they're not going to take care of you. So I'm going to hand deliver you down there, get this thing and walk you back. So think about it. There's a guy who took half hour, 45 minutes off the floor at a busy time of year to make sure that I got what I needed for no financial gain for himself. Now, having said that, over the years, we've moved and now I drive past two Nordstrom to get to the third Nordstrom where he works. So I drive 45 minutes away when I could drive 10 minutes away or 30 minutes away to get to the Nordstrom where he works. And, you know, I call and make an appointment and I only work with him and that's it. But this is like, I've known this guy for, you know, going on 25 years now.
That's awesome. And it's an interesting kind of coincidence because nobody likes being sold to generally in business or outside of business. It's about finding a fit.
Yeah.
In your case, quite literally finding a fit. But the point stands, right? Because you mentioned this briefly when we met in Florida as well. It's about finding the right solution for the customer. Can you give an example of that, maybe even in a more businessy context? Because I think people are like, yeah, it's all fine when it's a pair of gloves. But if you're talking about a computer software system that's $100,000, you would never do that. But you would actually do that.
Absolutely. And I'll give you a perfect example. In this example, it works out really well. But I'll give you an example. We had in my prior business, we had a client of ours, big telecommunications company that sounds a lot like Verizon. So these guys were a client of ours. They approached one of my sales guys about this project and wanted to use our software to solve this problem that they had. And so my sales guy, Steve, is out meeting with the client, talking to them. And we're looking at a solution that was probably about in total about $150,000. And Steve says, you know, these guys don't have the money for it, but you know, here's the meeting I have. I hear it's Verizon. I'm like, look, it's half hour from me. I'm going to go with you on this meeting. So I go down there and the head of this department, we're speaking with her, brilliant woman, and she's sharing what they're trying to do. And periodically she'd look at Steve and say, will the software do that? And Steve, being a stereotypical sales guy, said, oh, yeah, it'll do that. And the whole time, as she's describing what she's doing, I'm thinking, our software is not the right fit for this.
Right. It's will it do that? You're like, what? Is that really going to?
You know, it could do it, but it's really not designed to do this. So eventually she says, hey, so will it do this? And Steve's starting to say yes. And I said, let me interrupt for a second. Everything you're describing, Steve's absolutely right. The software could do that, but it's really not designed to do that. My fear is that initially everything's going to work great. And as the system grows, you're going to have performance issues. It's not going to meet your needs. And you're going to end up having to replace it probably 18 months to 3 years out. It's just not going to do what you really want. And you're going to have now like a homegrown thing that really isn't designed to do what you wanted it to do. And so she looks at me and she says, well, have you guys built like a custom platform that does exactly this? And of course, my man Steve wanted to say yes. And I said, you know what? We built similar things for big pharmaceutical companies, healthcare, insurance, but never this exact thing related to how you're tracking your projects. And she looks at me and she says, you know, I've talked to like four or five other vendors who all say that they've built something exactly like this. So I looked at her, I said, you know, hey, that's great. I'm glad you got it covered. She goes, no, they're all full of it.
Right. They're all lying too.
Because if someone had something like this, I would know about it because I'm dialed in the industry. The fact that you guys are so transparent about what you do and what you don't, I'd rather work with you. She looks at me and says, what do you think it would take to build this thing out? I said, look, just a prototype based on what you've described right now, you're looking at probably the better part of $750,000. You're going to spend $3 or $4 million building an actual system like this. And then based on what you told me about your users, you're probably looking at spending $1 million a year just in maintaining the system. So I mean, you tell me, is that even worth looking at? And she says, well, how soon could you guys start? And we ended up doing millions of dollars of business with them on this project because we were willing to say, no, this isn't a fit when it isn't a fit. Now, every story doesn't end up that way. In some cases, you say, no, it's not a fit. These other guys can help you and you're done.
I see. Right. Because either way, you're earning the trust.
Absolutely. Here's the thing. That client, anytime anything came up, we were the first call they made. Hey, can you guys help do this? And if not, who should we talk to? Because we had built such a level of trust that it worked out great. And everybody involved in business has had the bad client, the toxic client, the client where they really shouldn't have done business together, but now you're in the deal and you're not making money and they're not happy. And it's like this like sinkhole of time and major distraction. It's just, it's a bad deal. So bad deals never work out well. And it's the same thing. I mean, if you got a relationship where you're just not seeing eye to eye, you try and force that, it never turns out well. People are like, well, you know, I guess we could go out, but not so much. It just doesn't work out.
Johnny, we know if you listen to the show, you are driven. In fact, we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey.
We have hired a lot of team members over the last 17 years. Going through endless resumes, well, that's a time sink. But you know what else is a time sink? Interviewing endless people, because they're all going to give you the best face forward.
That's why we love Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets.
Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast.
And listeners of this show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/charm. Just go to Indeed.com/charm right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/charm. Terms and conditions apply.
Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Lennon and McCartney, Jagger and Richards, Watson and Crick, AJ and Johnny. What about the perfect duo when it comes to growing your business? Well, that's you and Shopify.
That's right, Johnny. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling your own fire merch or promoting your productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
What I love about Shopify is no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, as well as millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. And AJ, you don't have to just sell your stuff anymore. With Shopify Collective, you can curate products to sell from the brands that you love, giving your customers more variety and your business more sales.
Shopify is your no-excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/charm. Go to shopify.com/charm now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/charm.
Now back to the show. Yeah, there's tons of that. And I think a lot of people, they are looking at the short term, the sale, instead of what's going to be best for the customer. And it's easy to say that in business, but if you're thinking about this for relationships, this happens all the time as well. Just personal stuff, dating stuff aside, there's tons of people that go, well, you know, I really want to be friends with this person, or I really want to date this person, or I really want to stay married to this person, because they don't want to rock the boat, or they don't want to admit that they're sort of like sunk cost there, like you said, in the deal. But if when you look at it from a business perspective, you're sitting there nodding and going, yeah, we should definitely do that in business. I urge everyone to sort of apply that to their friendships and their personal relationships too, because there's probably something in there where you're going, oh yeah, that's different because, oh God, I don't want to think about that.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a matter of that little voice that says, maybe this isn't right. That voice is usually dead on. And yeah, we just go, maybe I'm just overthinking it. And not really. I mean, the people who acquired my business, I remember right before we completed the transaction, I just had this feeling like the chairman of the company. I'm like, you know, there's just something a little bit, this seems a little bit odd with this guy. And maybe he's just like the stereotypical New Yorker. I don't know. Like, you know, you can get in all these stereotypes. I'm like, yeah, it's nothing. And then so, years later, we grow, everything's successful. I leave the company. A couple of years later, this guy gets indicted on like counts of fraud for doing all these things he shouldn't have done. And it was like, man, my spider sense was pretty good. I just didn't listen to it.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for intuition. I spoke with a couple of guys who register for the Art of Charm program. And everybody who's ever sort of been cheated on or anything like that, they always say, you know, I knew it years ago. I had these weird sort of gut feelings that I ignored. They weren't based on any evidence. It was the way that he looked at my wife at dinner that one night, or something like that. And it's like, oh, yeah, that. And it's always 20/20 hindsight. But if you can learn to trust those intuitions and things like that, obviously you'll end up really sharp and you can always see that. You're good at uncovering things like that, like uncovering the truth in competitive business situation, relationships. I know you and I had talked, you have a couple of questions that you ask to uncover the truth in situations like that. Would you share those with us?
Sure. In competitive situations in business, there are two key questions that a lot of people don't think to ask. And when you're going to hear them, it's one of those V8 moments where it's like, oh man, why didn't I think of that? But it really comes down to this. The first one is, so let's say they already got, in a business context, they've already got an existing vendor. So you could say to them, you know, these other guys, I'm sure they're doing a great job for you. We like to get a sense of maybe where we're deficient and other people are doing a better job. Can you tell me some of the things that you like best about working with those other people? And they'll often share with you all the things that they like. And then you say, well, if you could change one or two things about them, what would those be? And the beauty is that if I said, what don't you like, they'll get defensive immediately because they probably picked that other vendor. But if I say, what would you change about them? It's kind of opens up possibilities. And now they'll say, well, you know, I wish that they were more responsive. I wish they were more creative. I mean, you know, pick the profession. It could be anything. And then you just get to simply say, is the potential of working with somebody who could overcome those issues worth a discussion about how we might be able to help? And it ties into this notion of something we call disarming, which I didn't say, oh, then, hey, you should talk to us because we're great. And now the customer is going to say, oh, that's kind of slimy. But if you say, hey, is the potential of solving what you just told me your current person can't do worth the discussion about how we can help? And that little sequence of questions usually takes like, you know, 90 seconds to 3 minutes in total. And you get amazing insight into what matters to your customer and what doesn't.
Interesting. Right. So how does that go specifically again? So how do we know we need to ask that question, first of all?
Well, so what you have to recognize in a business context is, look, there's a finite set of reasons why somebody would switch from whatever they've been doing as the status quo to you. And generally, it's because the current solution they have, which in some cases is no solution, the current solution they have isn't meeting their needs. Either the existing vendor has totally dropped the ball, or the business needs have changed, and now you're not sure if that person can do what you need. You know, if you think about it, it's the same thing if it was on a personal level. Well, either, hey, this is the person for me, and I think this is going to be the person I'm with the rest of my life, or you know what? There's some things I like about him and some things I wish I could change that I don't know I can ever change. It's the same psychology of it.
You're still married, right?
Yeah, I'm still married. Exactly.
Just checking. I'm checking the validity of your.
By the way, and the reason I'm still married is because my wife's extremely patient.
Ah, got it. Okay, she asks the right questions too.
Exactly. And so the idea is that if you ask your client, "Hey, what do you like best about this other vendor?" Or for that matter, it's open competition. I say, "Hey, if we weren't available, if we were beyond capacity and we just couldn't handle your needs right now, can you tell me some of the things you like about the vendor you'd be leaning towards?" So let's say if I was an accounting firm, I might say, "Oh, so you guys already have accountants doing this stuff. Hey, what do you like best about what they're doing for you? Because we like to get a sense of maybe where we're not doing things as well as we could." And they'll brag and say, "Oh, they do this. They make sure that our stuff is filed on time and it's accurate." And they'll cover stuff that really is just table stakes. And then you say, "Okay, so if you could change one or two things about them, what would those be?" "Oh, man, I mean, we get these surprise tax bills in the 11th hour." "Oh, really? How does that impact you?" "Well, I mean, all of a sudden we're having to write a check. And sometimes, you know, it's like, how could we owe tax on it? We didn't make money. And then we're scrambling for where we're going to find the money. And it impacts payroll. And we got all this tension between the partners." "Oh, okay. Is the potential of working with someone who gave a little bit more advance notice and plans so you didn't have surprises worth the discussion about how we might be able to help?" And so that sequence of, "What do you like about them? If you could change one or two things, what are those?" And then finishing up with, "Is the potential of fixing that worth a discussion about how we might be able to help?" creates that little trifecta that allows you to uncover what's important to them and then ask them questions to see if it's important enough to solve.
Right, right. Because you have to be solving the right problems in order to get the deal in the first place.
Exactly. And guess what? They might share with you that the other people are doing great. Like, the biggest question I get asked with that is, so if I ask them what they like and they tell me all these things and I say, "Well, what would you change?" And there's nothing they would change. Then what? I say, "Well, so then there might be two or three things that you guys do that your competitors don't." And you say, "Look, some of our clients tell us this is important or that's important. How about for you?" And they're either going to say, "Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. That is important." Or they might say, "Nah, it's really not that important." And then people say, "So then what do you do?" I say, "Well, if they just said that they like everything about their current vendor, and if the other stuff that you do that others don't isn't important to them, then your job is to say, 'Hey, I'm glad you're in good hands. You know, I wish you the best of everything. Would you mind if I followed up with you in 4 months, 6 months, just to see if anything's changed on your end or our end that might warrant an additional conversation?' And if you do it that way, they're going to invite you back in because they realize you're not trying to push the deal. You're just trying to find the fit."
That's perfect. And again, it's all about earning that trust. Now, you're really good at asking questions. Obviously, that's listening is the biggest part of sales, especially when it comes to big deals like the ones that you do. But a lot of our listeners are either in transition from one job to another, or they're getting their first job if they're younger coming out of school. Do you have great questions to ask for when you're applying for a job? Because surely you've hired and surely you're one of the top question askers that I've met. So I'd love to hear your opinion on that.
You know what? I think we all think that other people are better than we are. I will tell you, there's a couple that I really like, and it falls into the same category. I've got an article about this in Forbes recently that's been pretty popular. The question you ask is, if you're the candidate, we'll ask questions like, "So you've probably had people in this position. So here, we'll role play this. You get to play the employer." So I'd say, hey, Jordan, I realize you're looking for this position. You've probably had people in this position who have been successful and not successful, right?
Of course.
Can you tell me some of the things that, like, some of the attributes that you saw in people who were successful and what made them successful? And now you go through and you describe what makes them successful. And what about for the people who weren't so successful? What kind of attributes did they have?
Sure. So now I'm starting to say attention to detail, and they show up on time and they communicate whether or not the news is good or bad. And the people who haven't done that, of course, haven't done those things, but also they've been more concerned about managing their perception of how great they look to us rather than the results that they're actually getting or something like that.
Right? Ah, I got it. Okay. So that is a pretty sharp contrast. So based on our initial conversations, which attributes do you think I have?
Oh, now I have to match them to you.
Yeah. And what's going to happen is human nature is, well, I don't want this person to feel bad. And guess what? All we want is the truth anyhow. So if they said, "You know what? Honestly, I think you're probably more in the negative camp," then you know, don't hold out for that job because you're not getting it.
Right. Well, you showed up late and you're not really dressed appropriately and you keep burping. So
Exactly. So this probably isn't going to work for you. The flatulence is really sending a bad message.
Exactly. Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Before your next interview, don't eat chili.
Right.
I remember I was president of a country club at one point, and there was a guy who came in to interview for membership. We would interview every candidate, and this guy comes in and, you know, was convinced he was a really big deal, which everybody joining a club at some level has the right to feel they're a big deal. But the whole idea of a club is that everyone's the same. No one's a big deal. And so this guy comes in and he's got his, at the time, BlackBerry with him. And I'm asking questions and he's like checking his email and messages on his BlackBerry. So about 7 minutes into this discussion, I said, hey, listen, you know, I can tell you got something pressing going on. So, you know, let me let you get to that and we'll just wrap up from there. And he looks up and goes, well, so am I in? I said, well, we'll get back to you. So then the membership coordinator at the club calls him up and says, yeah, I understand you had some other things going on that were really pressing. So Mr. Altman said he's happy to meet with you next month on this date at this time. And so the guy says, oh, you know, that's not really convenient for me. She says, well, then should we, you know, withdraw your application? Oh, well, if that's the case, yeah, then I could make it. She says, oh, that's great. I'm glad it worked out for you. By the way, you may want to leave your BlackBerry in the car.
Oh, wow. Did he get the hint?
He got the hint. He got the hint. But it's kind of funny. I mean, if I had known you at the time, we would have said, look, maybe one of your BlackBerry in the car and listen to this show.
Yeah. Wow. You know, it sucks because I think a lot of people are so accustomed to checking messages and things like that. They don't even realize that they're doing it anymore. And for me, I know I went through a period, if you're really comfortable with people, you fall into this trap because you might be sitting with somebody that you love, your girlfriend, your wife, or your husband, and you just bust out your phone and you don't have that weird nag. Normally, if you're in new company, you're like, I should put my phone away. This is rude. But somehow all that goes out the window with enough familiarity. And so people who are really comfortable, which is a bad sign if you're trying to maintain a professional environment, they'll do that without even noticing. Notice that engineers do it a lot because it's kind of like, well, I'm doing my job. You know, I'm on the ball. I'm really responsive. I'm checking my email all the time. Meanwhile, their boss is sitting in front of them and going, hello, is this thing on?
Yeah, as I've often said, when I'm speaking at an event and you get the person who's got their phone like under the table or under the desk, like as if you can't see it. And I'll often ask them, hey, just curious, are you playing with your phone or yourself? Because I can't tell from this angle.
And oh, wow.
And it's like, it's like, hey, dude, look, if you're tweeting or something, you'd have it out on the table and you'd be like, you know, hey, this is a good line. I'm tweeting it out. If once you got under the table, it's like, look, you're obviously doing something that you're uncomfortable with. So like, then just leave the room. It's cool.
Wow. Have you actually said that to somebody? Because
Yeah.
I mean, did they laugh or were they like,
saying it more for the entertainment value to the rest of the room.
Of course.
The other 600 people thought it was pretty funny.
Sure. Yeah.
That guy probably not so much. And candidly, he laughed and said, you know, hey, sorry, I was just checking something. I said, no, hey, if you got it, we can all wait.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is what you're balancing, all of our time versus what you're doing right now. It becomes pretty clear, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. You're no stranger to asking for advice as well. And you had a really interesting point on this subject as well. A lot of people ask for advice and they're not actually seeking real input. And that's kind of a brilliant insight because I know I've definitely done this. So if you're listening out there and you're thinking, yeah, I ask for advice all the time, I'm really good about it. And you're the type of person that goes, hey, what do you think about this? And the person says, well, I like suit letter A better. And you get angry about it or you go, well, what B has this and this and this. You're not maybe really seeking real input, right? You're just looking for validation or confirmation. I think this is a really interesting distinction, and I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that because I can see that being huge in business, especially at the higher levels when it comes to strategy and things like that.
Sure. Human nature is we want validation. We want someone to tell us how brilliant we are, how great we did. But you only improve when you overcome any deficiencies that you have. And so the most valuable input you can get is the critical feedback that maybe isn't so fun to take. And so what I often ask people, look, if you're asking and someone then says, oh, yeah, I didn't really like this part, and now you start defending it, then you've missed the point.
Right.
It's like, oh, but here's why I did it that way. The correct answer is, wow, thanks for your input. and then internalize it. And then if you disagree, you can discard it. But once you get combative, you're never going to get candid feedback from that person. There's an event that a couple of friends of mine and I put on every year called the Remarkable Growth Experience. And it's two other guys, Marcus Sheridan and Joey Coleman. And both just really talented speakers, put on this two-day event. And every time one of us gets off stage, the first question we ask is, hey, what do you think I should have done differently? Because we're not looking for each other to say, oh, dude, you rocked it. You were awesome. We want to know, what was the one sentence that just didn't seem right? What was the one slide that we put up a half second sooner than we should have? Because next time we do it, it gets that much better. And so this one guy, Joey Coleman, I was delivering some workshops in Denver last week. And Joey happens to live in Denver. I said, hey, why don't you come in and do a half hour each day? So the first day absolutely killed him. People came up to me after. I was like, man, he was awesome. He was amazing, incredible, fantastic. Joey and I were having dinner that night. I said, hey, Joey, you know, you said all of you do this. And I think the people who don't think they do it now tune out. How would you feel about saying, look, most of you statistically are doing this? Instead of saying, oh, and he goes, man, that's great. I'm going to do it that way from now on. And the next day, like as if he'd been saying it that way forever, boom, most people do it this way. And the audience responded great. But it's like he was able to take this feedback, even as someone who's at the top of his game, and make an adjustment that makes him that much better.
Over the last 17 years, we have launched our fair share of online courses, coaching programs, and finding the right platform has always been a challenge.
They say if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. But if you're an entrepreneur, you know the hard work that comes with it. That's why you need Kajabi. Kajabi makes it easy to run your entire online business from one platform so you can focus on what you love, creating.
Kajabi is the ultimate all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable recurring revenue.
No matter your niche, Kajabi makes it easy to turn your skills, passions, and experiences into enriching online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, thriving communities, personalized coaching, and more.
The best part? Kajabi doesn't cut into your revenue because everything is owned and controlled by you. So keep 100% of what you earn.
And with Kajabi, you also get robust analytics, easy payment options, email marketing tools, and customizable website templates, all built in.
You don't even need a huge audience to make sustainable income. There are thousands of creators on Kajabi making six and seven figures with less than 50,000 followers.
Right now, Kajabi is offering a free 30-day trial to start your business if you go to kajabi.com/charm. That's KAJABI.com/charm.
Go to kajabi.com/charm and join the creators and entrepreneurs who have made over $7 billion.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, back to the show. Yeah, I think it becomes very difficult to do that because if you don't look for the real input, you can't really improve, right? And everybody wants to really improve, but in the moment, you're not necessarily after that. Sometimes you're looking after the validation. So how do we make this distinction? Do we realize, okay, when I'm asking for something, I have to actually want the input? Or do you just wait for a while until you're not emotionally attached to it? Or do you just kind of get over it and realize, listen, the best time to get feedback is right now. The best way to get feedback is to ask right away. And the best way to get real feedback is to not react to it negatively, which is easier said than done. I mean,
absolutely. One of the things I'd suggest is if you really want that feedback, but maybe right after you ask, you're like second guessing, like, maybe I didn't really want the negative feedback. Then you start with, hey, what are the two or three things that you really liked about, you know, what I just did? Great. So what are the one or two things that if I changed would make it a whole lot better? And that way, it strokes your ego a little bit that says, hey, this was really good. And then you get the critical feedback. I mean, we were at the program together with Michael Port, and Michael says, hey, look, I want people only giving positive feedback. Amy and I will give critical feedback. And candidly, for anybody starting out, that's exactly the formula to follow. I believe once you get to a certain level and you know that, hey, you know what, I'm good enough, I don't need someone to say, hey, wow, your tone was good, your tempo was good. I want to know what to fix. But you need to be in the mindset that says, look, no matter how good people thought it was, I know it can always get better. And once you get in that mindset, then negative feedback isn't negative, it's constructive, and you can do something with it.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. It's funny because Michael Port came up, he's my speaking coach as well, and he sat next to me a couple of weeks ago, and he goes, so I don't do that whole, this part was good, that part was good, but here's what you need to work on. So here's a list of all the stuff that you did wrong. And I was laughing because you know that only a certain type of person can handle this, and it comes from getting beat up so much, but seeing the results of getting beat up that much, that you go, okay, I don't need to like feel good about this before, so I have something, I'm good at speaking in this area, and I need work in this area. It's like, just give me what needs work. I already know I'm good at other stuff. I feel like that does come with growth. Because when I was in my 20s, if you were like, hey, you need to work on this, 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 and this, I'd be like, you know what? You're a dick. I don't care. Or like, you know what? Your shirt's ugly, so you work on vocal tonality. I mean, I don't know why I did that. It's just ego. It's something that you just got to eventually absorb. And I think the transition for me came from, oh, these people are telling me because they want me to get better at this. They want me to get better at this because they know that's what it takes to succeed. I apply this stuff, and when I do see better results, which results in me getting more money or better success in the career. This ends up being better. You value it more than you value the, well, that was really good. And now I find myself on the other end of the scale where someone's like, that talk was really good. And you're like, yeah, but I need to work on this, 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 and this. And you go, thanks. You know, and you're just like, if only you knew, right?
Yeah.
Frankly, when you get feedback from somebody that gives you something really pointed, you go, oh, that's good. That's insightful. Because the better you get at a skill, the harder it is to find something that needs improvement. So when people do find something and you see that as a legitimate critique and not just them being nitpicky, it's really, really valuable.
Absolutely. These guys, Marcus and Joey, that I speak at a number of events with, we had a conference that was really successful. And afterwards, they said, you know, I just don't think you're vulnerable enough on stage. I was like, wow, that's awesome. And I was telling someone the story, like, oh, were you pissed? I'm like, no, because like, where else are you going to get that kind of honest feedback? That's great. These guys know me well enough that, okay, that's something to work on. And I've spent the last year like intently working on having that vulnerability, because my feeling is if I don't show that level of vulnerability, then I'm not perceived to be as accessible, which means the message that I think can really help people doesn't get through to them. So I could either be egotistical and say, well, I don't care about that. Or I can say, man, I got to fix that. If there's people you trust, then take their input at face value and embrace it. And you might not adopt everything that people tell you about. That's okay. But I always say that if you feel you're really good and you think you don't need to improve, then compared to everyone else, you're going to be stagnant, and the other people improving themselves are going to catch up to you and surpass you.
That's a good way to look at it, right? Because if you're one of those people who's motivated by competition, that should do the trick.
Absolutely. Well, and guess what? Even if you're not motivated by competition, it's just kind of a Darwinist theory, if you think of it. It's like, hey, look, if you're not improving your game and someone else is, then all of a sudden, you're not as desirable as someone else. And that can be professionally, personally. So it's just a matter of, are you doing everything you can to maximize the best you, whatever that happens to be? So it's, you know, if you just compare yourself to you, you don't have to be competitive against someone else. Are you better today at things than you were a year ago? I guarantee if you look at talks that you gave a year ago versus today, you're better today than you were a year ago. And every time I'm looking at talks, I will, every 3 or 4 months, look at a talk from a year ago just to see, man, wow, I thought that was really good, but it's better now.
But it's crap. I'm afraid to watch video of me from even 2 months ago because I know it's awful. I've come a long way, baby. Now, one thing I'd like you to leave us with this. You've got this really cool 4-quadrant grid that you use for taking notes in phone conversations. And yep. It's kind of like, how does everyone not know this? Is that something you can explain on the radio format?
Sure. So the idea is this. Very often people come out of a business meeting and someone says, man, how'd the meeting go? And they go, oh, it was great. You know, really, what made it great? They say, oh, you know, they loved me. We really got along well, really connected. Really? What else? Oh, we had a great conversation. Which would be a perfectly fine explanation if you were dating. But in a business context, it's not information that tells us whether the deal is real or not. And so the idea is that people struggle with what information should they collect and how do you structure that in an actual business meeting. And so what I do is we created something called same side quadrants. And it's four quadrants. So if you took a blank sheet of paper, you draw a vertical line down the center and then a horizontal line across the center. So you have four equal quadrants. In the upper left, you put a little word issue. In the upper right, you put impact and importance. In the lower left, you write the word results. Lower right, you write others impacted. Then as you have discussions with the customer, issue is kind of the tip of the iceberg. So for example, it would be, oh, here's this issue we're trying to solve. Here's this problem we're facing. Great. Impact and importance is things like, if we don't solve it, here's what happens to our business. If we keep having to deal with this way, here's the negative impact on us as a business, as well as me personally. And importance is generally, compared to other things, how important is it to solve this? Then as I'm talking to my client, I say, well, let's say we implement everything we talked about 6 months out. How would we know whether or not we're successful? Because simply having completed it doesn't make it successful. Just because you bought it and we sold it doesn't mean that we were successful. What results would you see in your business that would let us know that we achieved success? And we capture that there. And then when we get to others' impact in the lower right, we say, who else is impacted by this? What's the best way for us to include them in a way that's comfortable for you? The beauty in having this, these little four quadrants is that as you're asking these questions and taking notes, you're putting the information into the respective boxes. What that means is that with a simple glance at the sheet of paper, you can tell what you forgot to cover. So you say, oh man, we never talked about results. So now if you want to know which opportunity is real and which one isn't, guess what? It's the one where they can quantify the impact the clearest and where they know exactly what results they're looking for. Those are real opportunities. And if those boxes are empty, then you're probably more passionate about solving their problem than they are.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll put it in the show notes and people can go, oh, okay. That way they don't have to rewind this 87 times and go, wait, which goes in which box? I think that's brilliant because now you know what you've overlooked, right? You know, okay, oh, I didn't ask about this, or what's the real purpose of this conversation? Having you read between the lines when you've actually taken good notes is a lot easier than just either remember what somebody said or to go through a cryptic page of notes and go, yep, seems all right. You're writing persuasively for yourself if you're taking your own notes and you're not boxing them up.
Yeah, and the idea is this way you're kind of categorizing the comments. And if all of a sudden you realize that there's a section missing, you can actually tell the client, you know, I've been taking notes and one of the things I've been trying to capture is the impact this issue has on your business. And you know, there's nothing really I've gathered. I mean, is this a problem that's even worth solving? Let your customer convince you that, yeah, this is worth solving.
Huh. Convince you that it's even worth solving. I guess I don't really know exactly what that means.
So think of it this way. You're the customer. Now you've said, let's say you're the customer and someone's an IT vendor. And you're thinking about, yeah, you want to put in a new phone system. And you say, okay, well, so you want to put in a new phone system. I mean, what's wrong with your current system? Well, you know, I just think we want to get a new one. Okay, so if you don't replace it, I mean, how does that impact the business? And the person says, you know what? You know, it's not really that big of a deal. It's not that big of a deal. I might say to you, look, Jordan, my sense is though you guys would like to put a new phone system, there's nothing really negative that's happened to your business because you don't have this system. Are we missing something? And usually what happens is the client, because they've been kind of guarded up to that point, and now we disarm the notion we're just there to sell something because we tell them, look, maybe this isn't a fit. And the client says, well, the reality is this, that our current phone system keeps crashing and we can't transfer calls and people end up in like this black hole hold and they're pissed off and we lost our best client. Oh, now I get it.
Right. Yeah. They let them make the case. Now they're selling themselves your product.
Yeah. Let them convince you why your stuff matters. What I always say is that if the person doing the selling is more passionate about solving the problem than the customer is, then bring your wallet because you're going to have to pay for whatever it is you're trying to sell. Because the client's not going to. So your client has to be passionate about solving the problem, and then you're just there to help provide the solution.
Thanks so much, Ian. This has been really good. Regardless of whether or not you're a salesman, there's tons of psychology in here that people can use, both on the job and, frankly, in their relationships as well. I'll leave some of that to everyone's imagination, but thank you so much. How can people find more from you?
You know what? On Twitter, it's Grow My Revenue, and my website is growmyrevenue.com. And of course, every week in Forbes, you can see my articles there as well.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jordan.
I love that. I've been saying that it's better to be trusted than liked for a long time, and I couldn't really put my finger on it. It's just something I learned through experience, and I love having that articulated, and I think it's great. Everything you do should be about earning trust, not getting the sale. And this is true both in business and in personal relationships. It's better to be trusted than to be liked. And that doesn't mean you can be a jerk as long as you don't lie, but I think he did a great job with it here. And of course, the quadrant thing that you write down all the phone conversations in is brilliant. It, so often you get off the phone, you think, okay, I got it. And then you realize I don't got it. Especially if it's a business conversation, you'll see some serious results from using that. And last but not least, of course, looking at our own ego. Are we really looking for advice, or are we just looking for validation? Bravo, Ian. Thanks so much for your time. And of course, this show's a fanarchy. It means it's run by you. I rely on you to keep my finger on the pulse. And of course, Jason, producer Jason, helps a lot as well, but we're kind of helpless without you. So if you know someone who's a good fit for the show, let me know, jordan@theartofcharm.com. And if you enjoyed this, don't forget to thank Ian on Twitter. We'll have that linked up in the show notes, as well as the other resources mentioned on the show, including an article about how to do that quadrant drill that he mentioned. I also post tons of stuff on Twitter that just never makes it to the show. Articles, insights, funny stuff, or at least funny in my own mind. I'm at The Art of Charm on Twitter. Our bootcamp details for our live programs at theartofcharm.com/bootcamp. And remember, we're sold out 5 to 6 months in advance. So if you're even thinking about it a little bit, you should get in touch ASAP. Get some info from us so you can plan ahead. And of course, on the website, we've got our articles and our blog for those of you who just can't get enough AOC. And we really do dig deeper into some of these topics on the blog. So be sure to check that out as well. Special thanks to the Jasons for their help in production of the Art of Charm podcast. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment you can give us is a referral to someone else, either in person or share it on the web. Now have a great week and leave everything and everyone better than you found them.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Thanks for listening to The Art of Charm. Get more confidence, relationship skills, life hacks, and everything for the extraordinary man at theartofcharmpodcast.com.